All right, folks, you've had your maximum fun. Now let's just idle back a little bit. Let's relax. Let's pull the excitement level down. It's time for Vox Pop on a Thursday, January 9th. I'm Ray Graff. It's time for another edition of the Writers Forum. And joining us in studio, Barbara Chepitis, Lolly Davidson, and Stephen Sawicki. They're here to answer your questions about the process of creative writing. So we'll talk about that. We'll take your calls. It'll be nice and cool and relaxed. No maximum fun, kind of in the middle. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. If you're a writer with a question for our team, voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Medium fun ahead. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Writers Forum today, and the writers are back. Barbara Chepitis is author of a dozen published novels. She has been a long-time writing and performance instructor and just a fabulous guest. Lolly Davidson is a professor of writing at SUNY Adirondack. Lolly's short story collection, Strange Appetites, won the Adirondack Center for Writing's People's Choice Award. She has a recent book out. We'll talk about that. Stephen Sawicki, who was on this show hundreds of years ago, is back today. He was an assistant writer for two produced screenplays, published his novella Invisible Friends in Absolute Magnitude, a past jurist for the Nebula Awards, and his writing credits include short stories, columns for SF Chronicle and Cine Fantastique, and the Damn Aliens Rant and Review column. All right, you want to talk writing? The writers are here. Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program as well. voxpop@wamc.org. Barbara, Lolly, Stephen, welcome.
Hi.
Nice to be here.
Hello.
Happy New Year, all.
Same to you.
What do you mean, I guess?
Have you seen the news?
Yes.
Let's not talk about that.
The news is never good, but there's a lot of bad stuff out on the West Coast right now.
And I could use less wind here.
What is with the wind?
I don't know. My dog is very upset about it.
Really?
Yeah.
The dog freaks out?
Oh, she freaks out.
Why?
She goes in the yard. She's like, it's a tsunami.
It's a noise.
The pond is
the noise that's
rise.
Created by the wind.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Really
the low-frequency rumbles and whatnot?
I think she just hears things from many different directions and just decides, I want to be indoors.
Yeah. Do you get the dog one of those, comfort blankets or whatever they call them?
The thunder
the
coat?
Weighted.
The thunder coat, yeah.
No.
No? Why don't you try that?
I don't think it would work. I tried it on my last dog, and it had absolutely no effect.
By the way, you two know each other, yeah?
We do.
Yeah.
We're kind of married.
Oh, really? Stephen and Barbara are an item. Oh, go figure. So will there be marital fighting and strife during the program today?
You never know.
Okay.
It depends on if he says, no, you're wrong.
Oh, he's not allowed to say that?
Well, no.
But isn't it an open relationship? Is it not incumbent upon an open relationship to have the ability to say, no, you're wrong?
Not on air.
That's an entirely different show.
Okay. No, I'd like to stir it up here.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lolly is very quiet over there. You're staying out of the fray. Now, the last time we were on, which was Halloween, right? Or the day before Halloween?
Yeah.
Your book was just out, right?
Beyond Sight. Yeah, it's a ghost story based in Saratoga Springs. I have a couple of other novels, Against the Grain, about saving the redwoods in California. Seems timely.
Yeah.
Those are north, those redwoods, but they're not impervious to fire anymore. Anyway, and Blue Woman Burning, a novel that kind of was inspired or makes reference to 100 Years of Solitude, Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Mm-hmm. So things are going well for you. How are you getting ready for another semester?
That's right.
That's exciting.
Teaching creative writing.
That's great. Barbara, what's new with you? Anything cooking?
Not much. I'm doing a lot of job applications, looking for work. I'm finishing up my ghost nonfiction book.
Oh, yeah. How is that coming? Have you made any progress?
I have. I have two more things I need to do. I need one more person I have to interview, and I really want to go to Lilydale.
Lilydale, we talked about it briefly. It's a
gated community of psychics and mediums.
What? Where is that?
It's in the western part of the state.
If they're psychics, do they need a gate? They know everyone's coming. I mean, what's the point?
They wait at the gate and they go, oh, look, it's so-and-so.
You have to consult the oracle to find them.
Yeah.
Where's Lily? What state is it in?
It's in New York.
No way.
Yeah, in the western part of New York State, about, I think, 3.5 hours from here.
Amazing.
And I'm just curious about it.
Will they let you in?
You have to kind of call ahead and make reservations. And I'm waiting for the wind to die down before I do that.
It might be a while.
It might be a while. Because I've found that as I'm working on this book, weird stuff is happening in my house.
What do you mean? And all right.
Things are moving about, like my earrings, which are hung in a certain place in my bedroom, got scattered across the bedroom floor.
You sure that wasn't Stephen?
Apparently, no.
He looks guilty.
I know. It was not me, nor did I see that.
Aha. Are you skeptical, Steve?
He just heard me yelling about it.
I absolutely am.
I know. And I had these two packages that I ordered for Christmas, which disappeared from the kitchen table.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
I didn't
Steve
see those
again.
Either.
He didn't see them either.
I'm looking at him. He looks
when a
guilty.
Package comes in now, I show it to Steve and I say, "Where are we going to put it?" So we both know where it is.
Well, you are writing a nonfiction book about ghosts,
yes.
And you say that weird things are happening at the
yes.
house. So, you know, Skinwalker Ranch, right, out in Utah. You know Skinwalker Ranch?
No.
It's an interesting place. You should look it up. So. Some of the scientists who are there studying say there is a hitchhiker effect. And when they come home, whether it's on the East Coast or whatever, things happen.
Really?
Once they've been there. So maybe there is something to this.
Yeah, it's like a virus.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You should check out that Skinwalker thing.
I've
you
heard
could probably
of it.
Swipe a few things
from
your book.
I will.
All right, Stephen, let's find out. You said you've been on the show before. It must have been before my time. Which is pretty far back. So you've been on this show way back when.
Yeah.
Do we have microphones then?
Cans with string.
Cans with string.
Yeah.
All right. What is Cine Fantastique, by the way?
So Cine Fantastique was a magazine that covered genre, science fiction, fantasy, horror movies.
Oh, cool.
And I did some reviewing for them when they were around. I think they're out of business at this point.
What's the skill in writing a review? What do you have to do?
So there's two types of reviews. There's the purely academic review, which is done by somebody who has a lot of knowledge about the subject matter and is essentially looking at it in perspective in terms of the body of knowledge and how it fits within the body of knowledge. And then there's what I do.
Your impressions made me feel all gushy inside.
Yeah, I really look at it from the person who walks into the store and picks it off the rack, and what do they think about it? What do I think about it? Is it I enjoy it? Did I struggle with the beginning? Did I like the plot? Did I think there were problems with the plot? Would I follow the author again? Would I recommend it to somebody?
But you have to keep in mind that Steve is not...
Your mic is drooping, huh?
I know.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that happens.
Like my life. Steve is not actually doing the reviews. He has a group of extraterrestrials who review the books.
So there's...
That's why it's damn aliens.
Those are probably the ones that are making the earrings go all of the time.
So going back, I was a straight reviewer. I wrote under my own name, and I did movies, I did books, I did... short stories, I did magazines. I did a series, I did a novella that involved a guy who was visited by aliens, and they came to live in his basement. And they would operate out of his basement. And the guy's dog drove the car occasionally, and there's a lot of weird things happen.
Okay.
They cloned Elvis.
I had the idea that maybe it would be interesting to do reviews rather than do them from a human perspective, than do them from an otherworldly perspective. So if you were an alien and you came to the planet and your only impression of the planet was going to be the written material, what would that look like? So I started the damn aliens speak to you review column. And so they look at 3 or 4 books a month or so, and they comment on the books not so much in content, but in terms of the human perspective.
What is going third person? How does that help you make a review? Or a third alien, whatever.
Well, it allows me to be not me.
But we know it's you.
Do you?
Oh, it's going to be one of those shows.
I've been asking him that for years.
Well, you two have been reviewed. What does it feel like when someone says something that maybe you disagree with? How do you feel?
My early response to reviews was to let Steve read them all first and hand me the ones that were good, like where they called, a couple of them called me a goddess.
Oh.
I'm good with that.
Okay, that's
I'm
all right.
I'm good with that. Yeah. And to just keep me shielded from anything.
So you don't want to see that you're negative press.
No,
but you do want to see your positive press.
Oh, absolutely.
Some people don't want to see any of it.
I know.
That's where I fall. We'll get emails, positive and negative. I don't really want to see any of it. You know, it just run your own race.
Well, listen, if someone calls me a goddess, I'm not going to be the one to say no.
We actually met because of reviewing.
Yes.
Ah.
We were at a convention, and he told me about the aliens that lived in his basement. And the monkeys, the research monkeys that were writing a novel for him. And I said, wow, I might marry this guy. And
wow.
I said, you're a reviewer. You should buy my book. He said, I'm a reviewer. I don't buy books.
Also a turn on.
So she threw one
somehow.
At him.
So I
she,
did. For some people.
Threw the book at him. All right. Yeah. You know what? Let's take a break here, and I'll try to reassess my career choices. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Writers Forum. If you have a question for Lolly Davidson, Steve Sawicki, or Barbara Chepitis, feel free. 800-348-2551, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Vox Pop, Writers Forum, Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. Lolly Davidson, Barbara Chepitis, and Steve Sawicki are here to answer your questions about the creative process. Do you think it's tougher to write fiction or a well-done review?
Well,
sort of depends on who you are and what you like to write, I think, you know?
Yeah, there are two different writing styles. I do short fiction primarily.
Yeah.
So it's similar many times in length to a review column. It's two different mindsets, two different approaches, two different ways of thinking. And fiction is more difficult because you have to be coherent through the whole thing.
Yeah, I would say even though I prefer to write fiction, I think it's a lot harder than writing a review. Yeah.
You have to make things up out of whole cloth. You have to create a world.
And there's just so many ways to be bad at it.
That's true. I'm going to be the disagreeing voice here.
Okay.
Because
that's good. We need one of those.
I know. I think it's much harder to write a review than to write a book of fiction.
How so?
Once you're into your characters and your plot, it carries itself along, and it has an energy that you really don't have to worry. You're using their voices. It's not about you. It's about them and their world. And that's like, yeah. Okay.
But isn't that what Steve is doing to some extent? Because of the aliens in the basement and whatnot?
That's what he did. My creating
I think
yes.
so. I think so.
Characters.
I think
reviewing.
That's the best way to approach a review or something like that. He's adopted a voice. And they're a lot of fun.
I think you might be onto something here because I can remember some of my better papers in high school involved me pretending to be a really smart literary type. You know, I just it was kind of instinctive. It was like I didn't know that I was pretending. I thought that was me, but later on I'm like, oh yeah, I was putting on a persona.
You adopted a persona. Yeah. I did that in college. I remember writing a it was a microbiology class, and I had to write a study of E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
So it became like a little mystery novel, the mysterious E. coli.
In a biology class.
Yeah.
Microbiology.
You went fiction in a How were your grades? Were
they
good?
They were great.
Yeah, actually, I think that would work quite well.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah, he had never gotten to read anything so much fun.
So this email came in from Susan in Deerfield, Mass. Love the show. I'm a certified medium.
Ooh,
with the NSAC, which is located in Lilydale National Spiritualist Association of Churches. Lilydale is an interesting place, but we're not just in Lilydale in New York. We are in many states.
Oh, my God.
And Susan is in Massachusetts, so there you go. This email from, I think it's Tim, but I'm not sure. Could you go over the legal process for creating a pen name that will shield my identity and protect my privacy while at the same time allowing me to get paid without being identified?
Oh, wow.
We're probably the wrong group to ask that question.
I was going to say you may need Paul Rapp for that.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
However, it's tricky to believe that you are going to produce something and put it out in front of the public and remain anonymous, that using a pen name is going to keep you from somebody finding out
who you are.
You know, one thing I could never, speaking of pen names, never figure out, and some of these big novelists, they make a ton of money, they'll say, Joe Schmo writing as Bob Frankson. It's like, if your name is on it and then you're writing as someone else, what's the point? Is this what you were talking about, Lolly, when you—
Adopting a persona?
Yeah.
I really can't imagine. I mean, I suspect that what that was is somebody developed a pen name at some point in their life, and then it became known that it was really them, and then, you know, they use the pen name for a specific genre. So, so that's why I can imagine that they're saying, look, it's me, but I'm going to be writing in this genre as this person.
Right. But you can literally write under any name you want.
Yeah.
And that's a
William
deal.
William Shakespeare.
Yeah, I probably don't want to pick that
That's taken.
Or spell
it's
William
hard
differently.
To spell, yeah.
But it's an agreement you make with your publisher or whoever's going to publish your work that you want it published under that particular label or name. And then, but when it comes time for a check, you want the check under your name. So that's you don't need a lawyer. You don't need to go through any process. You don't need to legally change anything. You can just do that. People do that all the time.
I've considered pen name just because Chepitis is hard to spell.
Yeah, and to say.
Like I want to do a simple one. You know.
So what would it be?
Maxine Stone.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that great?
So
yeah.
Why don't you do that?
I may. Give me time. But even so, when I publish mainstream fiction, I'm Barbara Chepitis. When I publish science fiction or speculative, I'm B.A. Chepitis.
Interesting. And why?
Because when I started out with Jaguar and the more sort of science fiction, cyberpunk stuff, my editor said, we need to hide that you're a girl.
What the blue blazes? Why?
Because feminism is dead.
Because this was in 98. And she said, male readers will not read a strong female protagonist if it's written by a woman.
Is there any science to back
this
up, or is
this
just a gut feeling from somebody? That sounds ridiculous.
She was a very well-known editor. She edited William Gibson and people like that. So she was no slouch. And I asked her, I said, you know, when I do readings, won't they notice that I'm a girl? She said, by then it will be too late.
Ah, they will have already read it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that A, that's sort of demeaning.
Disgusting. Yeah.
And B, I don't even know if it's true. I mean, if the book is good, you read it, right?
Right. Like I said, my first one came out in 98. That was the opinion at the time, and the science fiction community at the time was quite conservative.
Really?
That's true for a number of women writers, both in science fiction and outside. James Tiptree was a woman. C.J. Cherry used initials. A lot of women use initials because you can't tell from initials. A lot of women adopted male-sounding names to use. So
yeah. And, you know, it's on his bio. He was a Nebula jurist,
yeah.
A jurist for the Nebula Awards. And we went to one year. Hmm. That didn't go well, did it?
Oh, boy.
Because they had
this.
Not yet. James Tiptree won the Masters, the Grand Masters Award years ago.
Yeah.
But they had not yet nominated, like, Ursula Le Guin.
Okay.
She's a, you know, incredibly important female author. And that year, they, a guy won it, and he got up, and he said something that was so offensive, I cannot repeat it on the air.
No, please don't. But tell me after the show.
Right, right. And I was so angry, I just sort of slapped my hands on the table and got up and left.
Oh.
So that didn't
So that's how you two met?
Well, no, no.
No, that was after we met.
He already knew what he was in for.
It was already too late.
It was too late.
Well, I got to say, you've both been very well-behaved so far.
I know.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's the Writers Forum, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined by Lolly Davidson, Steve Sawicki, and Barbara Chapitis. Lolly, what are you working on right now?
I'm working on some humorous pieces. About technology. And, I've been sort of... reading a lot of McSweeney's Internet Tendency. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
It's an online magazine that's, you know, they kind of write, there's a lot of humor that is kind of like shouts and murmurs in The New Yorker.
So you're writing nonfiction humor?
Well, yeah, I guess it's nonfiction. I mean, it's in the realm between fiction and nonfiction, you know. I've always admired humor, and I've always watched a lot of comedy, and my writing, while not kind of laugh aloud funny, is there's always a little tongue in cheek humor to it, even when I'm being serious. So I just thought, every once in a while I write a humorous piece and just stick it in a file somewhere. So this time I thought, well, I'll see if I can get it out there. So that's been fun.
Is humor tough?
I think it's tough. I mean, I think all writing is tough, actually.
Really?
You know? Yeah. I mean, the first time I really decided I want to be a writer was I was writing this short story at the age of 23 in Paris, and I was like struggling. I was like, you know, kind of consulting the Oracle for every single word, and I thought, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, and I can't think of anything else I'd rather do. So it doesn't, I don't know. But anyway, so I find humor hard too, and just so interesting and magical because... I mean, I guess there are formulas, there are things that you can do. If you read the books on how to write humor, you do things in three, with a third thing being unexpected. You do exaggeration. But a lot of times what trips somebody's trigger is really unconscious. It's like several steps into the unconscious. So often I laugh at things that I don't even know why I'm laughing, or... I'll say something funny in class that I didn't plan. It was just like I saw a moment, I saw an opportunity for a joke, I made it, it worked.
Right.
I remember I had a friend in college that was very funny, and I used to watch him cracking jokes, and because I thought, how do you do this thing? And what I noticed is that he was cracking jokes all the time. But we only laughed at like 1 in 10.
Confirmation bias, right? That
right.
guy's funny.
Right, so we only remembered the 1 in 10. But he was cracking bad jokes all the time, and I think that's how humorists do it. They crack the jokes, they see how people react, and they keep
trying.
Well,
that's workshopping.
Steve obviously is a humorist.
You know. Oh, are you?
I think
it hasn't shown so far, but go ahead.
Really?
Give it a shot.
You have to read one of
I disagree.
Columns.
No, I'm kidding. So, humor is, I think it's, when you tell a joke, and it lands, you get an immediate response.
Yeah.
When you're writing something, and it takes perhaps a long time to write something, you're not getting that instant feedback. So how do you know you're on the right track?
I think a lot of humorists do it together, and they kind of they send their jokes back and forth, and they write to make each other laugh. And but
that's a good point.
Yeah.
And you have to think it's funny. If you don't think it's funny, then don't show it to other people.
Yeah.
That's a good start.
Steve always thinks my jokes are funny.
Really? Or so he says. Number one in the husband's code.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that makes humor funny is there has to be a kernel of truth to it. Mm. I guess the reason I really admire it, I mean, I think most humorists would say that they're not trying to save the world or anything. You know, like that would not be very funny. But I think on some level they are. Like, Colbert definitely got me through COVID. And yeah. I definitely, when terrible things are happening in the world, I go and watch him to see what his take is on it. And
did
it,
he write and, any and of his own stuff, me. Though? That's the...
I don't know how they do it.
I think they write it in a room.
I think they have a lot of writers.
Yeah, and then team. He goes through it with them.
Right, and he kind of makes comments in his monologue. Yeah. You can see that he's actually commenting to them, going, yeah, that one didn't land, or like that was, he'll say, well, that was a long walk. And I think that's actually, he's having a whole conversation with them.
Well, that's interesting.
Right on the camera that we're not quite aware of.
I never found him particularly hilarious. When he had the persona, and he was and I
Stephen
thought
Colbert,
it was funnier than when he, this is really me and I'm still funny. Yeah. At times, at least that's the way I saw it. There are so many different types of comedy. Of those comedies that you have read that are novels, what works for you? Like when I was a kid, I read a lot of P.G. Woodhouse, and it's to me, when I was 13, 14, most hilarious stuff in the world, the wordplay and just the zaniness. But what's funny to you when you read, Barbara?
I like the combination of sort of, and this was, my good reviews say this about me, that my combination of warmth and humor is what works. I like that going back and forth between people who are really connected and generating warmth together, and then the funny stuff that happens between them.
Can you have funny stuff in a book that, or a novel or a novella that is ostensibly serious? I mean, how do you work comedy into something that's very heavy?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I think most people would not think of 100 Years of Solitude as funny, but it is, actually. Herman Melville, Moby Dick, is quite funny. So, there's a lot of seriousness. And I think that the humor often is used to kind of help you bear the more difficult things in life. Mm-hmm. You often will find humor and very serious things together.
Yeah. My novel, These Dreams, is about very serious stuff. But it opens with a woman who meets a strange man in a grocery store who's feeding his lawn squirrels and declaring that he meets with the Blue Nordic space people.
Ah.
On a nightly basis, and they tell him stuff. And, you know, the woman's like, okay. You know, when you stand in line in a grocery store behind someone like that who's got some really, so.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. We're talking writing. We are talking the creative process with Lolly Davidson, Steve Sawicki, and Barbara Chepitis. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Barbara, how far along are you? How close are you to being done with this nonfiction book? Which, by the way, I want to review. I definitely want to review.
I am close. Like I said, I have two sort of external things I have to get done. There's one more person I want to interview.
Can you say who it is?
It's a medium.
Yeah.
And she was really good when I met with her. When I was researching, I met with a lot of different mediums, and some of them are like, yeah, okay. And some of them seem to actually have some in. So I want to speak with her.
And how can you sell? How do you discern
Well,
that?
By the way, they respond. You know, the one that I met that was just, she was just playing off whatever was going on in her head, rather than what I was asking her about. And the ones who say, you know, I have the letter M. Who's got a M letter? But the one that I met that was good was very specific, you know, and looked at me and my sister and said, which one of you has your mother's slippers and which one has her purse? And, you know, I had her purse. My sister had her slippers. I don't know where she pulled that from, but it was pretty specific.
Interesting. Now, when your angle here, is it when you read books about paranormal things, especially going back into the 70s, oftentimes it's just basically like a laundry list of a little synopsis of each interesting case. Where are you going with this?
I'm not going there with that. I think I'm about two things, and one of them is about how we manage loss and what it means to try and connect in a good way with the stuff that hurt us when we lost it? You know, can we stay connected in some way to those people we loved that are lost? And what does that mean? And the other part of it for me is I have a great sense of mystery and magic. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, that we get engaged with mystery and magic. And what does that mean? What does that look like? And why do we need that?
So this is philosophical in many
ways. It is. It's mostly stories, but it gets into the philosophy. And there are actual food recipes, too.
Food recipes?
Yeah, because
from
I love
beyond?
Food. Like, I connect with my grandmother because I can make the soup.
Oh, so you weren't channeling Julia Child and getting some new recipes.
No,
I understand.
No.
This email came in from Lee in East Hampton. The number is 800-348-2551. Any general suggestions, asks Lee, on how I can get started writing? I have stacks of ideas written down, interesting phrases, commentary, cartoons, song lyrics, etc., but can't seem to make something of it. I'm not sure if it's embarrassment, someone seeing my deepest thoughts or seeing an unfinished product, or I'm setting my own bar too high. I'm only aiming for lyrics, poetry, or short stories. The good part is the ideas still look good years later. I just always am doing other practical things, housekeeping, shopping, cooking, car repairs. That's from Lee in East Hampton.
Yeah, well, you know, the practical things kind of do have to take priority.
Yeah.
And if you're going to dedicate yourself to writing, it helps if you don't have to go to work full time or have a house to take care of or a yard to take care of or children or a partner. I think, like Lolly said, writing is hard, and part of the hard part is finding the time and the place and the energy. It's very hard to write at the end of a long day at 10 o'clock at night and say, oh, I'm going to write for an hour now. I can't do that. I'm exhausted by that point. So part of it's finding when's a good time for you, when you have the energy to do that. The other part is not worrying about what's beyond the page. Don't worry about how people are going to react to it. Don't worry about whether it's going to sell. Don't worry about how long it's going to be. And just put something on paper and let the work decide for you what it's going
to
be.
All right, we have to take a break here in a moment, but I want to check in with Lolly and Barbara on this. We've talked about sort of just making yourself do it. I'm going to write. It doesn't really matter what I write, but I'm going to do something. How important is that discipline in the process? Lolly?
You know, it's a mix. On the one hand, I go through phases where I say I'm going to go to my desk every single morning and just write come what may. And so, and I do think that the lightning is not of inspiration is going to strike more often if you do that. On the other hand, I think you have to listen to your kind of creative energies. And I definitely go into periods of hibernation, and that's okay too. So it's a combination of discipline and listening to yourself and being easy with yourself.
Are you too easy with yourself when you say, I got a block or I can't write?
No.
Should you say, do it, sit down and write?
No, I think sometimes it's better to walk away. In fact, some of your best ideas come when you walk away. There's, you know, the Eureka effect. You push hard on something and let go, and it's in the letting go that the inspiration comes.
Interesting. Barbara.
I don't know. I wrote my first novel when my son was 6 months old, and I was bored. I had nothing to read. So I said, I have to write something. And there was no reason for me to do it. I didn't have a lot of time. I was taking care of a baby and freelancing as a copy editor. But I needed a book, so I wrote one. I think the impulse to write in some people overrides all other considerations. That, unfortunately, has been my dilemma.
So it overrides everything.
It does. But also, like Lolly, there are times when I let something gestate for a long time. You have to find your right form. You know, I wrote short stories for quite a few years before I realized I was lousy at short stories. It was when I sat, I'm really bad
That's
at
not
it.
True.
Wow.
That is
Wait,
not
well,
true.
Hold that, that thought. Hang
really
on.
Bad at
We're
going to
take
she
a break.
She won a prize for one of her stories.
The self-flagellation can continue after the break. 800-348-2551. It's the Writers Forum. Stephen Sawicki and Lolly Davidson and Barbara Chepitis. And you, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Jimmy Cleveland, there's Little Beaver here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Writers Forum today with Barbara Chepitis and Lolly Davidson, Steve Sawicki. And before the break, Barbara Chepitis was very hard on herself, and she says she writes lousy short stories, I think was what you said. Why? I don't know.
I can't turn on a dime. I've read all of Steve's short stories, and he's the master. He can turn something on a dime. It's just like... He's like, because he drives race cars.
So you drive race cars?
Yeah.
Really?
So he goes like, near, near, boom, 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 and he's gone. He's got it.
So a short story, is there a page limit before it becomes something else?
Well, when I was writing the Jaguar stuff, I started out with short stories, and they were all like 50 pages.
Yeah.
And then the editor sat me down and said, you really need to like turn these into novels. Because 50 pages is too long for a short story. But I felt like I needed that amount of time to develop the characters and the situations. I'm just more comfortable with a longer form.
Mm.
You know, I have had my, as Lolly said, I did get an award for a short story. But I am more comfortable sitting down with a novel and really diving in that way. And I think you need to know that, like the caller, the emailer person, you need to know you've got all this material. What form do you want to turn it into?
I also wanted to say to that caller that they should probably just send their work out and probably have a writer's group and sort of bounce their writing off other people. It tends to be motivating, and it will give them a sense of whether it's good or not. And that also that feeling of like, oh, I have all these good ideas, but I don't know what to do with them. In my experience, what I found is that often the pieces are actually done, and you just didn't realize it, and you don't actually have to do anything with them.
That's such an interesting point. When you write, Lolly, a long form novel or whatever, do you know how it's going to end before it starts? Do you know when it's over?
I mean, sometimes you start from the end, and then you work your way backwards, and but sometimes it's complete surprise. And I think my best stories, you know, I think we like that surprise, that moment in writing, which for me is probably why I write. There's something that happens to the writer's mind where you surprise yourself and it feels like it comes from somewhere else. I don't know if it does come from somewhere else or if it's just the chemistry of what happens in a mind when you push it that way. But yeah, there's my favorite story that also got an award, The Opal Maker. Mm. The ending came like that, like a gift. And I loved that. So I think when writing's going well, that occurs.
Steve,
and it's almost magical.
When you write a short story, do you have the arc completely in your head and you just pop it down?
I have the beginning and the end, and I have some idea what happens in the middle. For me, it's the middle that I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get from beginning
shorter,
to the
just
end.
Just go right from beginning to end.
Well, yeah, that'd be the three-sentence short story.
I like sure. The number here is 800-348-2551, Writers Forum with Lolly Davidson, Barbara Chepitis, and Steve Sawicki. Richard is in Saratoga Springs. Richard, you're on.
Yeah, hi, everybody. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I do find the humor in the discussion today, so thank you for that. I'm curious, as someone myself who I've spent time in solitude for many reasons, but in that solitude, poetry started to come out.
Mm.
Always had an interest in rhyming, whether it be Dr. Seuss or rap music. But in those moments alone, putting what looks like poetry on paper, as I've gone back and coincidentally I've just read it recently. It leads me to this discussion of, the alien. I believe in the ancient alien theory. The question here is the idea of original thought, and when you are writing, do you believe that it's truly coming from you, or is it a connection to the divine?
Well, so you brought the divine into it, Richard, and we've talked about this before, and I know Barbara. We have talked specifically about things that come from somewhere else. Yep. Whether you're writing music or you're writing fiction or nonfiction, sometimes it just it's there.
Yep.
Expound.
Yep. I don't know. I do believe it's kind of like dreams. Sometimes we have dreams that are just clearing the garbage out of our heads.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have dreams that are, to me, inspired from somewhere else, or they come from somewhere else. And I Steve would disagree with me on this, so we could, if you want us to have an argument.
I would love that.
We could do that.
Sure. We have plenty of time.
I do believe there are times when we're being asked to do something, and that comes from outside us. Where does it come from? I have no idea. What does it mean? I have no idea. I only know that when it happens, you follow it. That's all.
That's you know? Yeah. Presumably your husband disagrees?
Yeah. Well, he doesn't believe in all the ghost things
I don't. I don't believe in the supernatural. I don't believe in the divine. I think.
Let him mention that he's afraid of ghosts, okay?
Ah, okay. Now it begins.
I'm afraid of things I don't understand. And I can't be scared by things. You know, if I watch a scary movie, I don't want to go out with a dog in the dark.
Hang on. You write about sci-fi and everything else. Why would you go into that if you get scared by it?
Well, you know, science fiction is technological based.
Yeah.
So it's spaceships and aliens and it's not. I don't.
That's the difference between us. He's afraid of things he doesn't understand. I love them.
I really like them. Opposites attract, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just think that all the stuff in your head is being produced by you. You may not be able to identify it, but you're creating all of it. None of it's being pushed into you from an external source.
And I will acknowledge that is entirely possible. I just don't know.
And I think that doesn't exclude the possibility that it's also divine.
Yeah.
You know,
I like that. Lolly. You know.
Look at Lolly is like the middle point.
Bonus points.
Steve, right?
Yeah.
I just want to see the proof. That's all.
Yeah. You don't get that. That doesn't happen. Nope, not allowed.
All right. We have an email here from somebody here. It's Mary. Hello, Mary. Mary says, are you able to address getting published or is it beyond the scope? I don't think it is. Tips on the best way to figure out which agents to query, industry changes, submissions now electronic, submission therefore loses all your careful formatting, comments on things like that.
I'll talk about that.
Yeah,
you want to talk about that? It's hard these days. Traditional publishing changed after 9/11 in a huge way.
Why was 9/11?
Because the publishers and agents were under attack.
They left New York.
Basically, yeah, they left New York. Yeah. And then with the change in technology, which allowed for self-publishing, a lot got changed.
And also the shift from paper to electronic.
Yeah.
Right. And I think also with COVID, too, then again was another shift because an awful lot of, I don't know exactly what happened, but in the publishing industry, they now outsource a lot of the editors. So there used to be a community of people, of editors who met at the drinking fountain and talked and had a whole culture that doesn't exist now.
Hmm.
Right.
They're all writing
things have changed and you have a lot more choices to make about getting published. Do you want to self-publish? How are you going to do that? There are still places where there are still agents. You can look for agents. There's websites that are reliable like agentquery.com, which will give you a list of agents and the kinds of things they like to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I feel pretty cynical also that, you know, the big publishers, the big five, they're really not interested in us. You know, they really are just interested in making money. They're not interested in books, I don't even think. They just want to make money. So they're going to be much more interested in publishing work from somebody who's already famous because that's a cash cow.
Wasn't that always the way?
It was, but I think it's just gotten worse.
It was, but publishers also maintained what was called a mid-list. And those were writers who were never going to have a bestseller, but we're going to sell 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 books every time they publish something.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe one day they might sell more than that. But they maintain this huge list of mid-list writers. And that mid-list has gone away. Publishing, they don't make any money on the mid-list anymore.
Interesting.
So they're not interested in it.
Right.
The top 10% probably of writers who are published, nothing has changed for them. They're still making a boatload of money. The publishers are still producing those books. The mid-list authors have gone to self-publishing on Amazon, which is...
Okay, that's interesting. Are people, and there are a zillion writers out there, just as the digital revolution allowed a million music acts to do their own thing.
Very similar.
Are some writers being too impatient and going right to self-publishing before they've exhausted all the old-fashioned avenues?
No, because there are a lot of writers who have become best-selling authors who self-published, and then the publishers said, "Oh boy, there's a lot of buzz around this work on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook," and then have approached that writer and said, "Hey, we would like to formally produce this in a hardcover or a paperback." So that's a path. Not many. It's a very low percentage that happens. I mean, very, very low percentage
that
happens.
Like lightning striking, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And I think there is a certain amount of impatience. I mean, one of the things that Lolly and I had in the community of writers that we came up through, and what Steve had in the community, the science fiction community that he came up through, is we had a community. And these were people who would look at what we were writing and we could talk about it. What are you doing? What am I doing? How's that going to work? How can I work it? You know,
there are also opportunities for practice. So there was the small press, right. There's the academic press. So there are opportunities for brand new writers to put their work out there. You didn't get paid sometimes nothing, or sometimes a penny a word, or $5 a short story, which nobody's going to survive long on that.
Yeah.
But your work got out there, and it got feedback.
And you got practice.
And you learned the process, the beginning process for that.
Yeah.
And that's still there. I mean, you know, go to poetsandwriters.org, go to Writer's Digest. You know, there are places where you can look up journals to submit to, and you can get your work in there. You know, lots of kind of mid-list or, you know, obscure writers are getting their work published out there. I think it comes back to, why do you want to get published?
Yes.
Are you trying to earn a living from it? Or are you waiting for somebody to wave the magic wand and recognize you? Like, what's your reason?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I keep coming back to, there's only one good reason to write, and that's because you want to or can't help yourself.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And so, who cares if it is a moneymaker at the end of the day? If you have to write, and you are. What's it, John Kennedy Toole? He wrote the book, and it was under his bed, or it was in his mother's closet or whatever until after he killed himself.
Yeah.
And then it was a Confederacy of Dunces, right?
Right.
And
right.
So I think that happens a lot. But, and we only, listen, we were going to talk about AI.
Yeah, I didn't get there.
Well, let's start with that next time
all
in a couple
right,
few
right.
months.
Okay.
But without being elitist, and you two and you, Steve, too, are all people who have been published and are relatively well known, is the noise level, because of the digital revolution, are there too many writers?
No, I don't think so.
It's good for your soul. So
yeah.
It can't be good, bad
yeah,
for
I would never say
humanity.
That.
No.
I think there is, I think it's like dog owners.
What?
I know. This seems like a slip, but it's not. Everyone has dogs. Not everyone is patient in training them or in caring for them and in doing what they need. They just, I just want a dog. And the ones who are don't take the time and the patience to develop the relationship, their dogs won't be a success. And I think the same.
All right.
But the same is
check,
true.
Please.
The same is true of writing. You know, it takes time and patience and persistence. The wisest thing anyone ever said to me was, the only difference between a published and unpublished writer is persistence.
Mm.
So you need that sense, too. You can't just sort of say, I just want to do this.
Yeah.
But they'll be weeded out. You know, the people who are just doing it.
Will
because,
they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll
you,
be weeded
you go
out.
Go online, and if you just take music for a minute, there are so many music artists out there.
Yeah.
You could never listen to all of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, and that's part of the problem. And a lot of them are very, very good.
Yeah.
And they will never make any money doing what they're doing.
Exactly.
They won't get club dates, or if they do, they're going to do this like the small press. You're going to get paid, you know, $50 which is not going to cover your expenses getting the stuff, getting your equipment there, and the time you spend. I mean, I did that for a couple of years.
Did some music?
I did. I was the sound guy, the roadie sound guy for a couple of bands.
Which bands? Anything good?
No. Really? They were good. The bands were good.
Yeah.
But we didn't make any money. Again, it's like writing. We didn't make any money doing it. And they were long nights. We started at 6 and we ended at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we made 15, 20 bucks each.
I mean, I think it's bad for earning a living to have so many people out there writing, but it's not. It's good for humanity. It's good that there's so many people who want to think and express themselves and share their ideas and strive to be better people. Yeah. Like, how could that be a bad thing?
There are absolutely worse things you could do with your time.
Sure.
Same with the music. It's great that there are people can do that now and get some exposure.
You know, Lolly, I got to say, your optimism level, your placid, centered, sort of zen-like presence today was a real departure. And I'm happy that you were here to center us. Steve and Barbara, there was no arguing. This is amazing. You guys were great. I was a little concerned there might be some, you know, Richard Burton and, those
sorts. No Virginia Woolf here.
Exactly. Martha. All right, you two, and Lolly, too, thank you for being here. Support comes from WAMC Underwriters, a group of dedicated local businesses and organizations that provide financial support for WAMC programming, sponsorship opportunities at WAMCunderwriting.org. That's it. We are going to do the Writers Forum again in a couple few months, and then we'll talk about AI because Lolly wanted to, and I denied it, and I'm sorry. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for the calls, the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Thanks, Susie. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Time once again to check in with the great, wonderful, cosmic Kizzy Williams-Francisco. We'll see you at 2 p.m.